It's the Pete Callender Show. With more than 20 years as a reporter and radio host in North Carolina, Pete Callender is helping solve the world's problems one podcast at a time. Because he's a giver. And now, here's Pete.
What is going on? Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. I appreciate patrons as well. They get access to the live stream. So if you want to hang out on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, live stream of consciousness, it's where it's happening. Go to the PeteCallenderShow.com. And there is a link there at the top for exclusive content for patrons like Jenny and Sean, Matt, Susan, Mike, Linda Grace, Lisbeth, JF, Leslie, Lisa, Jolene. I appreciate all of the support. They became patrons, and they're just the best. Also the best, don't take my word for it, they're voted the best equipment rental store 2 years in a row in the Mountain Express Readers Poll. So you can't even buy that. That's generally how I, you know, get all of my awards. But you can't buy that. That's the Readers Poll at Mountain Express. General Equipment Rental. They are located in Weaverville. They're at the intersection of Merriman Avenue and Reams Creek Road, family owned and operated for three generations. If you are looking to improve your power equipment for the springtime, this is the time to start shopping at generalrents.com. Go to their website, start looking at the inventory, because spring is going to be here. Stuff is going to start blooming pretty quickly. And when it does, you're going to be playing catch up, especially if you don't have the right tools. You got a big piece of property and, you know, they can help you find the right tool for the job. Whether you are looking to rent, they've got all the tools, big, small, like earth movers down to, you know, like power drills. They've got it all. So you can rent the tools if you don't need it for more than just, you know, one day or something. But if you're looking to buy some outdoor power equipment, then Husqvarna and Honda, you're not going to find better brands, and you're going to find them at General Equipment Rental, your official licensed sales and service provider for both Honda and Husqvarna. This is where I'm going to be going when Christy and I get our house that's finished being built. And when it's done, we move in. I'm going to have to do yard work. Yay. And that means, well, it does mean I get some power equipment. So I'm pretty happy about that. So it's going to be fun. And I'll keep you updated as we go along in that process. General Equipment Rental, generalrents.com. Think outside your toolbox. So I know we've been covering the school reopening bill a lot over the last week. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Just by way of an update here, the polling must have been terrible for Democrats on this because they all of a sudden they're making all sorts of efforts to reopen the schools. It really does now become pretty clear that this is now about who gets the credit, right? Who's going to get the credit for the school reopenings? It seems pretty clear to me. I mean, what do I know, though? I'm just a podcaster. But yesterday, as the North Carolina Senate approved a motion to reconsider, and I know it's kind of boring. What is this? It's parliamentary procedure. So a motion to reconsider is just like a do-over, okay? It's like, hey, we voted in the majority. We didn't get our way. We weren't able to win for some reason. Like in this case, it was to override the veto. And so the side in the Senate, at least, the side that wins, they can do a motion to reconsider. And so they did. They filed this motion to reconsider, passed very quickly. I don't even think there was any debate on it. And so now they're going to take it back up. And as I went over yesterday, what they're going to do is they're going to hold Senator Ben Clark's feet to the fire. Ben Clark, who's a Democrat, he blew off the Monday night veto override vote in the Senate. He didn't show. He says he had an excused absence. He had to work. Okay, so he wasn't there. Now, he's a sponsor of the bill. This was a bipartisan piece of legislation, and they had three Democrats, one of whom, Kirk DeVere, Senator DeVere, who, credit where it is due, I always say this, he actually voted for the original legislation, and he voted to override his own party's governor and that veto that came from Governor Cooper, unlike Ben Clark, who didn't show, or Paul Lowe, who flipped his vote and said, yeah, Cooper asked me to do it. He's a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. So I did it. Oh, and by the way, the schools in my district are already open. So who cares? All right. So Ben Clark was not there. If he had been there and voted yes, the veto would have been overridden. And when he was asked about this yesterday, as I, you know, gave you the AP quote, he said, well, you know, it's I'm not going to say how I would have voted because it would just be viewed as disingenuous at this point. Okay. So I don't know how he would have voted. Nobody knows how he would have voted. So let's get him on the record. Let's see how he would vote. And so they did a motion to reconsider, and they're going to bring it back. Just before this vote to reconsider, though, here's the key. Just before that vote, earlier in the afternoon, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services issues new guidance in the department's Strong Schools NC Public Health Toolkit. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's because that toolkit was what the Senate Bill 37 included by way of, you know, the recommendation, this is what you need to follow, is the DHHS toolkit. That was in the bill. And so now the DHHS has issued new guidance in the toolkit that would instruct schools to offer in-person learning to the fullest extent possible while following all public health protocols. Wherever did I hear this before? Oh, that's right. It was me. I said this. Oh, my God. Like, are you kidding me right now? How is it that that a podcaster in Asheville understands that you guys could have done whatever you wanted to do about this months ago, weeks ago, days ago? This has been open to you for all of this time, but only now are you like, well, you know what, maybe we should go ahead and revise this toolkit. It's already in the legislation. They're citing you, Governor Cooper administration. They're citing you guys for the recommendations to follow, for the guidelines to follow. You could have changed these when you wanted to, but you didn't. You preferred the fight. Why? Because the fight would take time. The fight takes time. You slow roll this thing, the four corners offense, right? You just run out the clock. I'm trying to figure out how many more kinds of sports metaphors I can work into this. At any rate, the prevent defense, there was another one. They have now made these changes to the toolkit to instruct schools to offer in-person learning to the fullest extent possible while following all public health protocols. According to a press release that they sent out, they say the updated guidance recognizes the growing harms to children who are out of school and relying solely on remote instruction, including negative impacts on academics, mental health, and food insecurity. All of a sudden, DHHS is interested in talking about the harms to the kids. Isn't that amazing? They have been radio silent on this for the last 3 months. The new guidance says schools should only use remote learning options for higher risk students and for families that opt for remote learning for their kids. So in other words, they have to have an option, both Plan A and Plan B in the toolkit still require face coverings to be worn by students, teachers, and staff indoors at all times. The State Board of Education is actually going to vote today on whether to formally adopt this update. Amazing how this can happen. I thought this was impossible. Well, obviously, DHHS wants all the teachers to die. That's obvious, right? Isn't that what I mean, that's what I've been told from the beginning of the debate over opening the schools back up. That's what I've been accused of. You want teachers to die. You're not respecting the teachers. The same day, the motion to reconsider gets taken up. And they're going to make Ben Clark vote one way or another on this, as they should. I think it's a great move politically. Put him on the record. Let his constituents know that this is how he behaves, that he pays lip service when he's drafting or sponsoring the legislation, saying, I'm all about it. But when his governor vetoes it, does he choose party over the kids like Paul Lowe did? Is he going to follow Paul Lowe's example? Or does he say, no, I'm a sponsor of this bill. I believe in the bill. I'm going to do the bill. I want this to pass. Hence my sponsorship of said bill. The North Carolina Democratic Party, this is, by the way, according to the North State Journal report I'm reading from at nsjonline.com, North State Journal. The North Carolina Democratic Party, meanwhile, criticized the motion to reconsider So you got the state party criticizing the this motion to reconsider, but at the same time, the North Carolina Senate Democrats sent a letter over to the Board of Education. You want to know what it says? Here you go. We write to urge the North Carolina State Board of Education to offer all our children, including exceptional children, in-person instruction. We recognize that almost 90% of school districts offer or plan to offer in-person learning in the next few weeks. And by the way, when they talk about this, they conflate this idea. Oh, in-person learning, it's resuming. Yeah, for like 2 days a week. That counts. So when you get to send the kid to the school for 2 days out of the week or whatever, that counts as the in-person option. So if you want the kid to go 5 days a week, like, good luck with that. However, we urge the Board of Ed to ensure an option is available in all school districts. We believe we can do so given the significant progress we have made against COVID-19 by following the CDC guidelines and the Strong Schools NC Public Health Toolkit. So DHHS sends out this update to do the thing that they claim they wanted the Senate Bill 37 to do. But oh my gosh, why would you pass this bill that relies on our guidance? Our guidance is crap. You can't trust our guidance. You need to implicitly and explicitly tell the school districts how to reopen safely. If you don't tell them how to reopen safely, by golly, by gosh, they're not going to be able to do it. And by the way, Senate Bill 37 also robs these local school districts of local control. You see, you got to have control over the local school districts if you are the school district. And that's paramount. Got to have local control, school districts. But we can't trust the school districts with that local control to implement school reopening safely. This has been their argument. And I think they have finally realized this is such a loser argument for them. Just in the polling, they're getting pummeled. All the polling I have seen, it's bad to worse for them. And our friend, I've mentioned this before, Casey O'Day, morning show guy in Raleigh in Greensboro. He points out the amount of goodwill that teachers, just in general, and I know a lot of good teachers that have been working very hard in all of this, and it's super frustrating, I know, but the teachers union have become sort of the avatar for all teachers, and what the unions have been doing and how they've been behaving. Talk about the destruction of goodwill that had built up over years, right? People are angry now at teachers. And there are teachers that are in the union not handling it very well. Like, it's funny because like all these years, they're like, we're so disrespected. I had a woman, I was arguing with a teacher on Twitter before she blocked me in a hot minute. she's carrying the cross. She's got a martyr syndrome. And she's like, oh my gosh, like we're doing all these things, putting ourselves at risk. We didn't sign on for this. Well, I don't think the grocery store workers signed on for the risks either. In fact, I'm not sure anybody actually signed on for, you know, risk at their job. But risk is what is inherent in life, folks. And she's making this argument to me on Twitter that that teachers are not respected. Nobody respects teachers anymore. Like, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Like, I'm unaware of another profession, except for maybe firefighters, right? They may be like the last ones, firefighters. Seriously, because cops, like they used to be respected too. Not anymore. They're done, right? Cops, no, sorry. Who about military, right? Military was always celebrated and respected and all this, but I don't know. Like, I'm old enough to remember the Iraq War and a lot of the treatment of the troops and stuff. And so I'm not so sure about like that. The way society, well, the left, turns on these classes of people, right? And what does this come down to? It's the perception that they're conservative. Like, that's the idea. Anyway, so who's left? But the teachers, like, the right and the left universally praises teachers. In fact, I mean, I talk about the Homes for Heroes program, which is open to police and firefighters and military and educators, as well as healthcare workers. Right? All five of these professions, the Homes for Heroes program, offered exclusively by Rowena Patton. She's the only Homes for Heroes real estate agent in Asheville. And this is a national program, but it gives buyers and sellers 25% back from the realtor commissions if you are in one of those five fields. Homes for Heroes. See that? Yeah, this is what you do when you don't respect people, is you give them, you know, big discounts on the realtor commissions like Rowena does. Of course, teachers are respected, as are these other professions. That's why people provide these types of discounts and benefits to them. They recognize and want to reward the work that these people do in large degree, the sacrifices that they make to do this work, which usually doesn't pay very well. So if you're buying or selling a house, by the way, call Rowena Patton at 333-4483. Her website is mountainhomehunt.com. That's 828-333-4483. And then start packing. Yeah, so this teacher is arguing that nobody respects them anymore, respects her and the profession anymore, and forcing her to go to work. Okay, nobody's forcing you to go to work. Senate Bill 37 has a carve out in there, an exemption in there. If you're too afraid to go to work without a vaccine, then you don't have to. You can keep working remotely. She also tried to claim that the NCAE is not a union, which is just absurd. It is a union. It lists itself as an affiliate of the NEA. It was formed at an NEA convention. They say we're an affiliate. Yes, they're a union. They just don't have collective bargaining rights. So this teacher's on Twitter just like making up stuff, saying, teachers can teach remotely. It's fine. Like, wait, are you kidding me? Have you not seen the data that just came out? 75% of the kids in third grade are not at grade level in reading. I don't know how, well, I, what I suspect is going on with this particular person may very well be driven by anxiety, just fear. I talked about this yesterday. I think that this is actually one of the unspoken underlying issues in all of this debate about COVID, is that there are some people that are just not, they're not handling it very well. Just from a mental standpoint, they're not handling it very well for whatever reason. And again, I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I'm not trying to attack people. I'm just saying, fear does things to people. It affects people differently. And as I mentioned on the show yesterday, people go through training all the time in high stress, fear-inducing types of lines of work, like police and firefighters, right? And military, right? You go through these training exercises so your brain recognizes what the fear-induced reactions are, and you're able to then cope and deal and adapt and overcome, right? All right, so the Democrats in the state Senate sent a letter over to the Board of Education saying, please, we urge you to urge the school districts to reopen. We urge the Board of Ed to allow local and state officials to change reopening plans, too, if warranted. Throughout the pandemic, we have seen how quickly things can change and how important it is to recalibrate and adapt. Okay. The dimmer switch. I'm surprised they didn't mention the dimmer switch. This is about, by the way, the reference here to local and state health officials, their ability to, shut down the schools if they need to. That's about protecting Governor Cooper's power, as I've explained in previous episodes as well. They go on to conclude, we believe, and I'm just giving you the highlights here, the letter's much longer. We believe the State Board of Education stands in a prime position to urge our local school boards to offer in-person learning to all students. By the way, Governor Cooper could have mandated all of this whenever the hell he wanted to. He could have. He could have mandated this via an executive order like he used to shut down the schools March 14th, 2020. Okay? So all of this has been available to him for all this time, and he hasn't done it. Why? Because the teachers' union didn't want to go back to school for whatever reasons. And maybe somebody will ask them, because they're citing, every time they get asked, they cite, it's risky, the health concerns and all of that, right? Those are the for the public record, on the record comments and explanations and excuses. I'm not buying them. I'm not saying that people aren't afraid. That is one of the consequences, by the way, of when you constantly crank out panic porn for a year, right? People believe you. And as we've gone over in the past, The Gallup survey done for Franklin Templeton Financial Advisors, the investment group, found that, you know, wide misperceptions of risk assessment and more pronounced among Democrats. This creates a feedback loop. Media regurgitating panic porn from elected officials, right? And then which drives more panic, which drives more policy, which drives more panic, and just keeps going. And the media contributes to this. They don't ever help break that cycle, which is why, you know, yeah, we're going to see what happens. Like Texas and Mississippi, I think it's Mississippi. They both lifted their mask mandates. They said, look, if you want to keep wearing masks, go for it, right? We're not telling you not to. But we're not going to tell people they have to. And we're not going to, you know, fine people and businesses and all this. We're lifting the restrictions. The numbers are coming down. Vaccines are going out. We need to get back to some sense of normalcy because, again, the mental side effects, the mental conditioning that has occurred over the last year where people walk around and are now suspicious of everybody and are afraid of everybody and don't want to go up and talk to people, right? Like that conditioning has real world ramifications. And people are like, oh, well, I guess we're going to see what happens in Texas and Mississippi. Yes, we are, which is the beauty of the federalist system, right? Because that state can do what they want to do, and we'll see how it works out for them. And if it's going well, then we could say, hey, maybe we can go too. Maybe we can start lifting our restrictions as well. Or, you know, maybe a bunch of people can sue Governor Cooper and he'll ease restrictions because that's usually what prompts him to do it. Anyway, Texas is a test case. And if it goes off the rails and everybody starts dying in Texas, well, it's probably going to be from all of the people crossing the border. Yeah, because they've read and received the signals that Joe Biden has been sending. Hey, I'm going to give everybody amnesty. So what happens? Everybody's flooding in. Oh, and look at that. They got all these COVID cases. Oh, and now your numbers are going to start spiking. And now they're going to blame Texas for lifting the mask mandate and all of the rules for why their numbers are going to go up. So, yeah, you're going to have that aspect to it as well. But we'll see what happens. Mississippi might be a better case study in all of this. But we shall see. Now, if you are taking a we shall see attitude on replacing your bed and all you're actually noticing is that you're sinking deeper and deeper into your mattress's ditch in the middle, then you need to get over to Mattress Man. Because they've got their big tax refund sale. It's going on all month long, actually. No credit needed at most. Okay, so at most, you're going to pay $39 down on a bed. At most. A lot of people don't even pay that. A lot of people just walk out with no down payment. There's no interest. Same as cash. If you qualify up to 24 months, you can buy now. You sleep on the mattress, they'll deliver it, you know, local five-star white glove delivery service for free, and they just deliver it, and you'll be sleeping on the mattress right away, and then you pay it off when your refund comes in. I got a message from Todd, and he wrote me a review. He actually wrote this, so I'm just going to read it. Take Todd, for example. No, really, please, take him. He did not write the part with the rim shot. Todd is a subscriber. He's a podcast subscriber. He heard me talking about the Biltmore line of mattresses at Mattress Man. They're the exclusive provider of the Biltmore collection, by the way. The same great mattresses they use in the Biltmore Hotel and Inn on the Biltmore Estate grounds. And Todd's 10-year-old mattress had divots in it. Worse than the divots, two side-by-side ditches. So he sent his wife to Mattress Man to check out the Biltmore line, and she knew right away. She found a great new mattress, the same style that the owner of Mattress Man sleeps on. And they made her a deal that she could not refuse to include free delivery. Who does free delivery anymore, really? And Mattress Man is even going to haul off their old double divot ditch mattress. When the wife is happy, everyone is happy, says Todd. Now, he did do that one. Well, he put a smiley face on the review. So I take that as a rim shot, so that's fine. MattressManStores.com, that's the website, five-star delivery service locally. They ship nationwide. Four stores in Asheville, Arden, and Hendersonville. A 120-day comfort guarantee and experience the difference at Mattress Man. Buy local and sleep better. What else is going on? Let's move on. Waters muddied on early release after lawmakers told only nonviolent offenders included. That's the headline. It's very verbose. From WRAL. I'm trying to figure out who's to blame for the misperception, let's call it, or the misunderstanding about who all's getting released from prison. Because apparently the original WRAL story gave this indication that a whole bunch of people that are violent offenders would not be getting released. It would just be nonviolent offenders, right? Violent ones would not be getting released. Nonviolent ones would. But apparently some violent ones are getting released. So I'm unclear as to where the misunderstanding occurred. But here's the story, as corrected, okay? Top state prison officials promised lawmakers this week that only inmates with release dates already coming in 2021 will leave prison under a settlement announced last week to cut North Carolina's prison population by 3,500. I know there's a lot of information jammed into that. Top state prison officials went to state lawmakers. They had a committee meeting, and they said, only inmates with that were going to be released in 2021, they're the only ones that are going to be released under this settlement. There was a lawsuit. I'm going to get into some of the details in a minute. But state officials also initially told these lawmakers during a committee hearing that only offenders who were in for nonviolent crimes, that they would be let out early. But a prison spokeswoman called up WRAL News after that meeting to correct this misunderstanding. So actually, yes, there will be some violent people getting out, according to the Department of Public Safety spokeswoman Pam Walker. The hearing featured Commissioner of Prisons Todd Ishii and Chief Deputy Secretary for Adult Correction and Juvenile Justice Tim Moose. Moose said during this hearing, quote, "No one has been is being released in this agreement that has committed a crime against a person in their current offense. If we can," and then after the hearing, they had to come back and say, "If we confused folks with what we were trying to do, we'll certainly go back in front of the committee and correct it. We were trying to do the best we could to explain a very technical process." Okay, so sorry if you guys got the impression that only nonviolent people were getting out, when in fact violent people are getting out too. And I know I said that only nonviolent people are getting out. So that might have contributed to the confusion, like the part where I said the thing that wasn't true. That might. Now, to be fair to Mr. Moose, Tim Moose, Chief Deputy Secretary Moose, to be fair, this might have been WRAL's fault, but I'm not sure. Because the spokeswoman said she could not say whether most of the people who are ultimately going to be released are going to be nonviolent or violent. So I'm going to just call them, we'll call them peaceful offenders. How about that? We'll call them peaceful offenders, because I know it's probably confusing, nonviolent versus violent. You know, the brain hears most of the same word there. So we'll call them peaceful versus violent, the peaceful offenders, right? Well, think of them like Antifa. It's an idea, right? She said the promise in this committee hearing that only peaceful offenders would be affected. Well, they were just focusing on one of the three methods that the state is going to use to reduce the prison population. This is part of an agreement that was entered into with the ACLU and the NAACP, which sued the state over pandemic conditions. They were like, you got to release all these prisoners. You're sticking them in the prison and they're all going to die from COVID. Ah! Right. So the Cooper administration then, they're fighting the lawsuit. And lo and behold, we have a settlement agreement. Sue and settle, folks. This is what the left does. They sue an ally in state government, and then the state government agencies settle with the litigants. And so as part of the settlement, they agreed to release 3,500 people over the next 6 months. Republican lawmakers, according to the story in WRAL by Travis Fain and Matthew Burns, says Republicans still upset over an unrelated lawsuit settlement dealing with absentee ballot rules last fall, drilled down on the new settlement Tuesday morning, questioning just how friendly the state's back and forth was with the groups that sued. Yeah, wouldn't you be? I mean, I don't know if Travis Fain is aware of this or not. He's only been covering politics for like a decade and a half or something, but the ACLU and the NAACP, they're allies of the Democratic Party. I'm not sure he's aware of that. It may be a recent development. I don't know. But at least in North Carolina, I know he spent some time up in Virginia for a while. But in case he wasn't aware, that is the case. Okay, that is the case. Just like it is the case, if you are looking for real U.S. military surplus, you go to Old Grouch's military surplus. That's the case. That's what you do. Speaking of cases, if you're looking for stuff to store items in, like in your work truck, but, you know, you don't just want, I don't know, a barrel. You don't want some wooden crate. You don't want one of those plastic milk crates or whatever. You want something cool. How about ammo cans? These are pretty cool. I'm thinking I might get one and use it as a prop in the background for the live streams, which, by the way, you can get access to by going to thepetecallinershow.com. Anyway, Old Grouch's military surplus. He's got the ammo cans. He's also going to help you with first aid kits, which if you're a hunter, if you are a hiker, if you go out fishing, you work outside, or maybe just like long walks, you know, in the woods. Well, either way, whatever the case, you need first aid kits as part of your backpack provisions, and it should be part of everybody's prep kit or go bag. So go to Old Grouch's Military Surplus, downtown Clyde, on Main Street. Shop is open Monday through Saturday. It's across the street from the anti-aircraft gun. Be sure and ask Tim about that story. It's pretty cool. And 24/7 online at oldgrouch.com. So the Commissioner of Prisons, Todd Ishii, promised that the prison system would not release anybody early outside of the powers already granted by state law. This was a concern some Republicans had, who felt that that other settlement that the Elections Board entered into with their political allies, which, as described by Travis Fain, Republicans feel that that election settlement changed state law without the legislature's consent, when it tweaked pandemic absentee ballot rules. I'd like to just take a moment here and dissect that sentence just briefly. Republicans who feel the election settlement, okay, I know I'm being nitpicking here, but no, it's not a matter of feeling. It's a matter of thinking. It's different. And this was something my old philosophy professor drilled into us, you know, when people would say, well, I just feel like, no, you think. That's the point of philosophy. You think. Republicans believe, they think, the election settlement changed state law when it tweaked ballot rules. It tweaked ballot rules. So what are rules that are set by legislation? What would you call those? What are rules that are codified by a lawmaking body? They are laws. Exactly. It changed law. You don't need to frame this as Republicans say it changed law. No, it did change the laws. It did, which is why it got struck down by one of the judges. Anyway, moving on here. Moose, this guy, I always forget his first name, Chief Deputy Secretary for Adult Corrections and Juvenile Justice, Tim Moose, he said only nonviolent offenders would be affected. Sorry, peaceful offenders would be affected. But he was talking about inmates that were that are going to be released through the system's extended limits of confinement program, or as I like to call it, the ELC. The state ramped up that program last year, and it essentially lets people finish their prison sentences from home or a transitional housing facility supervised by a probation officer. And so far, about 1,000 people have used this. But inmates who committed crimes against a person may get out early through the state's discretionary sentencing credits program, or as I like to call it, the SDSC. It's a different program. These discretionary credits. This is another early release program that ultimately cuts a person's sentence, but it can't cut it below their minimum sentence. Okay, so this is, you know, time off for good behavior, basically. You get the state has discretionary credits that they can throw your way, and that program is open for violent offenders. So yes, some violent offenders could be getting released early as part of this deal, but state law already has this program set up to do so, so that's what they're going to be utilizing. The underlying lawsuit, again, this is from WRAL.com. The underlying lawsuit, in this case, was contentious at times, they say, as advocacy groups pressed the Cooper administration to release more people to make room for distancing inside state prisons. Because both sides agreed to confidential negotiations to reach the settlement, the Commissioner of Prisons, Todd Ishii, told Republicans that he could not say exactly how many early releases the other side was looking for. They arrived at a final number of 3,500 over 6 months. So, like, what does that amount to? I don't know. 3,500 divided by six is almost 600 a month that we're going to be letting go out of the prisons. That's pretty remarkable. So what was the original number they asked for? He wouldn't say. That's confidential. The negotiations were confidential. Well, they shouldn't be now, right? Somebody should FOIA that, because they shouldn't be now. The agreement's been entered into, right? There is no longer any need for the privacy. Ishii said, I think it's safe to say that there was interest from the plaintiffs, so the ACLU and the NAACP, there was interest from the plaintiffs that the number be higher. Yeah, do you think so? That's a diplomatic way of putting it. Meanwhile, in Mecklenburg County, speaking of cutting people loose, Mecklenburg County District Attorney Spencer Merriweather had started dismissing charges from the 2020 protests in Charlotte. The dismissals, according to WFAE Radio, the dismissals come nearly 9 months after protesters filled the streets of Charlotte last May and June, and after local defense attorneys pushed the DA to move the cases along. Nick De La Canal said, he did an interview with the Morning Guy, Marshall Terry, and Nick says, so for 2 weeks, you know, we had nightly protests over the course of 2 weeks in Charlotte from May 29th through June 10th. And over the course of those 2 weeks, CMPD arrested 132 people. 10 of them got charged with felonies, like breaking and entering and inciting a riot. 120 people, or basically everybody else, they were all charged with misdemeanors or civil infractions. That includes failure to disperse and resisting a public officer. Those are the most common charges, he says. We also saw people charged with carrying concealed guns, assaults on a government official, impeding traffic, disorderly conduct, a whole range of charges, he says. He says, but all these people, like, so separate out the 10 felonies, the 10 people that are charged with the felonies, and you got like 120 that are all misdemeanors and stuff and civil infractions. They've been in legal limbo ever since. And of course, the DA places some of the blame on COVID-19 because the Mecklenburg County court system has suspended all non-essential court activities during the last year because of COVID-19. And that includes court hearings for most misdemeanor cases. So he says the 10 people charged with the felonies, their cases have been moving through the court system, but most everybody else has just been sitting around waiting on their cases to get before a judge. And so the defense attorneys are like, hey, these things are sitting on their record, you know, they're hanging out there, and it's a real hindrance for those people trying to find housing or jobs. And so, based on a tip that WFAE's reporter Nick De La Canal got, sure enough, he goes and he asks and checks into this. Well, he asks, but they don't answer him. The DA down there, Spencer Merriweather, has been dropping charges. About 24 people so far have had their charges dismissed. These are people that were charged with failure to disperse, resisting a public officer, or disorderly conduct. Yeah, thank goodness it wasn't against, like, you know, the Capitol building or something. They would be in real trouble then. He has not given a reason. He hasn't said anything publicly. He denied a request for an interview with WFAE. However, in previous statements, his office has said that this all goes back to COVID-19 and the court shutdowns. His office has said that more than 100,000 cases piled up last year during the shutdown, and there isn't going to be enough time or resources to prosecute everybody. So they have to prioritize. And his office says it's likely going to pursue cases involving damage to property and violence against others. But most other misdemeanor cases, those are probably going to get dropped. So open season, Charlotte Mecklenburg criminals. Also, he says, we should note that this isn't just limited to last summer's BLM Antifa protests. The DA also dismissed charges against 12 anti-abortion activists, or as, you know, we like to call them, pro-life activists, who were cited for violating mass gathering rules. You remember this? There's about a dozen protesters that were down outside of an abortion clinic in Charlotte. They were spaced apart, right? But they were over the limit of the capacity for the mass gatherings. And so they all got cited for that. They all had their charges dismissed as well. But this problem in Mecklenburg County, and by the way, this has been going on for as long as I've been in media in North Carolina, you know, half of my career down in Charlotte, this was a problem back then. This is the constant, you know, repeat offenders. It's just a revolving door in Mecklenburg County and the DAs are just like cutting deals left and right, and these violent people just get turned loose all the time. And now you've got the surrounding law enforcement in the surrounding towns and counties. They're pretty ticked off because, just like COVID, as the governor has told us, crime and criminals, you know, they don't stop at the county line. Right. For months, WSOC TV Channel 9 has been reporting on the frustrations from some in the Charlotte community over suspects accused of violent offenses being irresponsibly released from the Mecklenburg County Jail on bond only to commit more crimes. The head of the Kannapolis Police Department said they're facing consequences of a court system in Mecklenburg County. So this is in Cabarrus County. You got Kannapolis, you got Concord, the police chief there, Gary Gacek, I think. Gacek. Anyway, Chief Gary and the Cabarrus County Sheriff Van Shaw, they say they're frustrated. Their officers protect Cabarrus County, but their job is becoming more dangerous because of what's happening across the county line in the Mecklenburg County court system. For example, the latest, Michael C.O. Soma was charged with first-degree murder for a deadly shooting at an uptown Airbnb. He got placed under house arrest while he awaits trial. Think about that. First-degree murder guy being held for first-degree murder, and they put him on house arrest awaiting trial. And anybody want to guess what happened? He did not stay at home. Yeah, exactly. Who could have thought that a criminal who, like, kills some he is charged with killing somebody, first-degree murder, right, that he's not going to listen to them when they say, now you stay in your living room. Deputies said that they spotted C.O. Soma speeding Thursday, but he took off and then ran into a Concord house before they arrested him. They also found a gun. Meanwhile, here in Asheville, police officers keep quitting. Asheville police continue the struggle to recruit, train, and keep qualified officers on the force, and it's impacting emergency response times. On this would have been last week, the APD chief, David Zack, gave a briefing to council members on public safety concerns, and he said short staffing is drastically impacting day-to-day operations, forcing him to pull detectives from investigations and reducing the available school resource officers from 5 down to 3, which honestly, okay, I mean, Buncombe County does have in-person instruction going on, but you got half of the population in there at any given time. So do you really need all of the all of the school resource officers when there's not all of the students going to school? But the detectives, like, that's a pretty big problem because that means homicides are not getting solved. Cases are not getting solved, right? Your cleared case rate is going to suffer. And that's the thing, that, by the way, that people, like, when they get victimized, that's the thing that really irks people. That's the thing that really makes them think that they're not getting any value for their money, is that when they are victimized by crime, by criminals, by people, then there's never anybody brought to justice for that. That's an issue. And I speak from experience on that front. Like, There isn't a lot more you can do to somebody than let them think that there never will be justice for them. You really want to undermine confidence in the system? That's how you do it. Even when they pull fingerprints, for example. I'm just making up details. Anyway, let me shift gears here. Buncombe County Commissioner Jasmine Beach Ferrara. She wants Madison Cawthorn's seat. This is the story by our friend Corey Valancourt over at the Smoky Mountain News. Jasmine Beach Ferrara made an announcement that she's running for Congress. This is the Buncombe County Commissioner, District 2 County Commissioner, running for Congress. She's a Democrat. Here is the audio of the video that she put out.
Some people will say a gay woman who's a Christian minister just can't get elected in the South.
Okay, hang on a second. Some people will say that, sure, that a gay woman, what, isn't that a lesbian? Are we, do we lose the L? Do we, I wasn't aware. I can't keep up. People, like, I read stuff all the time. I'm constantly immersed in news and current events, and I don't know. Did they take the L out of the acronym? I don't know. But she says, as a gay woman who's a Christian, people say, or some people say, is the classic, you know, journalistic straw man, some people say. Some people will say that a gay woman who's a Christian minister just can't get elected in the South. Right. And some people would say that she could. Okay. There you go. So some people say that it can't happen. Some people say it could happen. I would be one of the people who say it can happen. You know why? Because it did happen. She's won election. Yeah. She won the county commission District 2 seat. Now, that is a far cry from winning a congressional seat. Now, I'm not going to make any predictions here about who's going to win or anything like that. But, oh my gosh, the Democrats are super excited. I mean, full swoon action going on right now for the announcement of Jasmine Beach Farrar. She's going to beat the Nazi, right? Like, that's what they're saying. I'm not kidding. They think Madison Cawthorn is a Nazi, and so she's going to beat him, and she's a gay minister. It's fantastic. Oh, my gosh. They have such a fantasy about this going on. Sorry, here's the audio. I'm going to re-rack it. We'll start it again.
Some people will say a gay woman who's a Christian minister just can't get elected in the South. Not to mention she's a Democrat. But I say an insurrectionist who flirts with Nazis and fires up a violent crowd to attack our democracy.
Wow, this crowd has some fight in it.
Well, he shouldn't get reelected anywhere. My name's Jasmine Beach Ferrara, and the truth is I've already been elected in North Carolina. Twice. On the Buncombe County Commission, Republicans and Democrats have found common ground, so we can...
All right. I gotta stop. Okay, she won District 2, and if you're listening to this and you're not from Buncombe County or you're not paying attention to the districts in Buncombe County, she's currently the District 2 commissioner, but she was originally elected District 1, which was Asheville, okay? District 1 is like the most liberal, the most Democrat district. That's the one she first got elected to. District 2, after they did the redistricting at the state level, it impacted the county district lines as well, and it's a Democrat district as well. Okay, so the idea that's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she was able to win over those racist, gay-hating Republicans. She didn't, okay? She didn't. She's won a district seat in Buncombe County representing Asheville, okay? So I'm not so sure that that's going to translate into widespread support across the entire 11th congressional district. Now, here is something that you should support, North Carolina farmers. For real, I think every Congress member and candidate supports farmers. I support farmers like the farmers that started Growers Hemp. They are based in Stanley County, which is east of Charlotte. Family farmers got together and said, hey, you know what? We're growing this hemp product. Why don't we make it into the CBD products? And this way we can control it all and, you know, keep the quality high. The price is low. And help the family farms, obviously, but also help you, the customer, on your wellness journey. So, what are you looking for? Better quality of life? Maybe immune system resilience? How about deeper sleep and lower tension? That's why I take it, is for the sleep. I take a couple drops before I go to bed. I sleep more deeply than I ever have before. I added Growers Hemp Full Spectrum Hemp Extract into my daily routine. I can tell the difference. Now, I have to tell you this. All CBD products, GovCo requires you to say some stuff, and here it is. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. The efficacy of these products has not been confirmed by FDA-approved research. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and nothing I have said is meant as a substitute for or alternative to information from your healthcare provider. So, consult your healthcare professional, please, about potential interactions or other possible complications before using any product. All right? Look in the Our State magazine. You can see their ad there. You can go to their website, growershemp.com. You can also find it on the shelves at the Broad River Hemp Company in Shelby, Medical Pharmacy in Locust, Durham Co-op. And if you go to their website, growershemp.com, and use my name, Pete, you'll get 20% off. I'm not going to make you spell my last name. Okay? Just type Pete at the checkout, and you'll get 20% off from North Carolina farmers to your home. Growers Hemp is about the hemp and not the hype. So one other thing here on the the announcement here of Jasmine Beach Ferrara running against Madison Cawthorn. She would like to run against Madison Cawthorn, but she's going to have to get through a Democratic primary first, which she might. Okay, she might. There are other candidates that are listed in the story by Corey Valancourt at Smoky Mountain News, like Josh Remillard, who is a Henderson County businessman, an Iraq War veteran, also a Democrat, obviously. He's still exploring a run, as is Mo Davis, who lost last time. And then there's another fella, Jay Carey, just listed as a Democratic candidate. Now, over on the Republican side, there has been some criticism against Madison Cawthorn from the likes of State Senator Chuck Edwards, as well as the former sheriff of Henderson County, Sheriff Irwin. So we may see some other challenge from one of them at some point. I don't know. I'm just speculating. There hasn't been anybody that's announced any kind of interest in running against Madison Cawthorn. But I need to point this out here. This is a Republican district, okay? And I appreciate everybody's excitedness about having a candidate running and Jasmine Beach Ferrara being the candidate. Oh, my gosh, she's going to be great. And she very well might get through a Democratic primary. By the way, the more likely it is that she is the nominee, the less likely it is that she's going to win, I think. And I'm not making a prediction here. I'm just saying the numbers don't really bear it out. Because as our friend over at the John Locke Foundation, Andy Jackson, points out, he's the director of the Civitas Center for Public Integrity at the John Locke Foundation, because Civitas and John Locke merged, by the way. Like last year. So he said, scrolling through the Twitter feed, I come across a tweet about Buncombe County Commissioner Jasmine Beach Ferrara announcing her candidacy for Congress in the 11th District against incumbent Madison Cawthorn. Inevitably, somebody posts what I see almost every time a discussion of the 11th district comes up. And what is that? It's gerrymandering. Oh, that's the reason Madison Cawthorn won, is the gerrymandering. It's all gerrymandering. Right. But based on election results from major statewide races from 2012 and 2016, he says, the 11th district favors Republicans by 12 points. it's an R plus 12 district. It's very Republican. And look at the last results. Madison Cawthorn beat Mo Davis by 12 points. So can you make this district more Democrat friendly? Yes, you can. By gerrymandering, of course. Yeah, you could gerrymander the bejeebus out of it and have it connect up to App State. You go all the way up to App State, and you can get some Democrat college kids into the mix from there, right? And then you can make it from an R plus 12, you can take it all the way down to an R plus 10. it's a Republican area. As much as it pains the people in Asheville to recognize this reality, you live in a Republican area, or as one server at a restaurant confided to me and my wife, Trump country, when he thought we were not of the conservative bent, I guess. You know, he really likes living close to where he works so he can walk to work, and he really likes that. It's just the rent is super expensive. He's in a crummy apartment, and, he would really much prefer to have more space, more land, you know, but the downside is he'd have to move out to Trump country. So you're not happy with all of the stuff that all the Democrats are giving you, but you're going to denigrate the people that live out in the area that you want to be in for making the conditions such that you want to live there. Makes sense, I guess. All right, that is a wrap for the episode. Remember, please subscribe to the podcast, and if you can, give it a positive review. I appreciate that. And consider becoming a patron of the program if you do it today. It's a Thursday. We're doing our live stream tonight, so you can get in on that action. You get cool stuff, exclusive content. All the links are at thepetecallinershow.com. Talk to you later. Don't break anything while I'm gone.